I can't believe that. I'm about to come up there and do those pieces.
Yeah.
I know, Bogey. I'm not going to call names, but Bogey was about to stand up in her seat. So, you also, just so you know, you also can come up and play with the puzzle afterwards. So, you'll enjoy that. But it's so true. We all have our place. We all have the unique place that we get in body. And that is a wonderful thing that if we go away today and we learn that one thing, and I think about the shoeboxes that people pick up, the shoeboxes. 75 shoeboxes. And you may have played the role of Carla in Bonnie. Wonderful job of organizing and repacking some of those because some people are like me and don't know about their shoebox. And so they were so gracious. But we walked together, we walked through the shoebox. Together, we repacked some of the covered with magic. And the cause of that 75 feet that we could get, that they otherwise would have got. As a body, we got an impact when we work together, when we find our place, when we look for our place, and when we use the gifts and the calling and passion that God has given us to make a difference in this kingdom. And He uses that in ways that are far beyond what we achieve. It's what you need. One of the things I want to see God works far beyond, but just a collection of our abilities. When I was in seminary, yes, it took lots of years of study to get as bad as I am now. I don't know what to do with that, but when I was in seminary, I had a systematic theology professor. He was a man named Dr. Boyd Hunt. And Dr. Hunt was wonderful. I loved sitting and listening and learning from Dr. Hunt. And he retired. I was really very fortunate because he retired a couple of years after I took his systematic theology class. I don't think there's a connection between how short a time he lasted after I was in his class, but there might have been. Now, it's been 35 years since I took that particular class. And yet, every single week, sometimes every day of the week, God uses the unique gifts that that man brought to his class, to that setting, to impact my life, and hopefully to impact others' lives. His investment, his way of living out those gifts that God has given him impacts us today. 35 years later, he died in 2007. And yet, his legacy lives on as he lived out his unique piece. He was a wonderful guy. It might surprise you to find out that in his class, we actually didn't have the textbook. I was riding yesterday, or a couple of days ago, with Eric, and we were talking about systematic theology. And, you know, he made the comment, yeah, I've seen a couple of those systematic theology textbooks and they're about this big. And that's true. In his class, he got the textbook.
There you go.
None of us see here, folks. Nothing was injured, and that's a little those systematic theology textbooks, they are huge. But it may surprise you that in his class, he didn't assign a textbook. Instead, we actually wrote our own. And 35 years later, I still have it. He would make notes on a board. He wrote in a script that's about this tall. And he was in the back of the notes page when I was at it. And he would occasionally give us a handout. The bottom of that page is something he put up on a mimeograph machine. If you don't know what a mimeograph machine is, Google it. but we literally wrote our own textbook. And so 35 years later, I have that systematic theology textbook that I still occasionally pull out and look at and use. wrote his own theology, systematic theology. It's called the Book of Romans. And in the Book of Romans, Paul is writing to the church in Rome and trying to help them understand what it means to be a follower of Christ and the theology of it. And it's important, you know, sometimes theology sounds like a bad word because it's like, ooh, I don't want to go that way. You know, I don't want to get messed up with that. But theology is important. What we believe, theology is simple. And so theology is important. It's interesting, whenever you look at Paul's theology, his book of theology, his systematic theology, the Book of Romans, what you find is that in this systematic theology that Paul is writing, he goes all the way through chapter 11, and it's that kind of, I mean, it's like reading a systematic theology. If you've ever read the Book of Romans, you're starting to like, wow, okay, let me take a deep breath. This is deep stuff. But then suddenly, from chapter 11 to chapter 12, he changes gears. And starting in chapter 12, it suddenly becomes a book of practice. How do we live it out? And suddenly Paul takes all of the practice, all of the theology that he's given us in chapters 1 through 11, and he starts telling us how to live it. That was Mood is one of the guys that I read this commentary this week, and he says, all theology is practical, and all practice, if it is truly Christian, is theological. It's pretty good, but all theology is practical, and all practice, if it is truly Christian, is theological. What we do matters. But why we do it also matters. Both sides of that. Being a follower of Christ has never been simply about believing the right thing. It's never been about collecting the right knowledge and knowing, okay, this fits here. It's not the first, just exclusively the first 11 chapters of Romans. It's not about mastering the material. It's not about knowing the material and knowing all about the things and being able to recite something or know certain dates or know certain facts. It's not about just those first 11 chapters. It's about the entire book. It's about the theology that's behind it, why we believe what we believe, who we put our faith in, but then it's also about living that out. It's about putting it into practice. It's about doing the things that He calls us to do. Being a follower of Christ is about where our faith is placed, in whom. We never accomplish anything just in living out chapters 12 and plus and following. We don't do anything, we don't accomplish anything in just living out right actions. And yet, by the very same token, we don't accomplish anything just by knowing the right facts. We have to know. We need to know who we have placed our faith in. And then we have to live out what He has called us to be. It's about both sides of us, of that formula. And what I want us to do today is I want us to look at what Paul wrote immediately following that 11th chapter when he makes that switch. So we're going to start and read Romans 12, 1 through 8. And he says, I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Now, let's pause there for just a minute, because it's important that right after the last verse of chapter 11, he begins with, I appeal to you, therefore. That therefore, and you know, you've heard the saying, what's the therefore, therefore? Well, that therefore, in this verse, is because of all of the theology. Everything that he's written between chapters 1, the very first verse of chapter 1 in Romans, all the way through the very last verse of chapter 12, all of that collection of systematic theology, what I have in the notebook, and more. All of that, because of all of that, because of the mercies of God, here's what I appeal to you to do. To offer your bodies, that is, what we are able to do in these physical bodies. Whenever Paul's writing and he's saying, I want you to offer your bodies, he's not saying we ought to be burnt as a sacrifice. He's not saying, you know, we need to take whips and whip ourselves. That's not what he's talking about. What he is talking about is, I urge you to present your bodies with their abilities to live in this world and to do good. To do the things that he has called us to do. I appeal to you on the basis of all the theology that I just told you. The result of it is I want you to offer your body. That is, your lives. We are called to offer our lives, who we are, how we live, in light of all that Christ, who Christ is, and all that he has done. Our response should be to live out the calling of God for our lives. And it is to offer our bodies. Okay, continue with verse 3. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them in prophecy in proportion to our faith, in service in our serving, the one who teaches in his teaching, the one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. What a wonderful passage as Paul fleshes out this, what it means to live out the theology, those first 11 chapters, in our lives in practical ways. And he says that we're not thinking better of ourselves. This is not a comparison. If you look at these puzzle pieces, they're different. And yet every single one is necessary. It's not about having the prettiest colors. It's not about having the best gifts. It's about living out the calling that God has given to you. And yet he says to do that with sober judgment. What does he mean? I have a big problem with it. You know the faults, the good stuff in marriage, we know one another for it. And I know the wonderful things that Susan is and does, all those wonderful things. She knows occasional wonderful things that I might accidentally do. But we also know each other's faults. We know each other's weaknesses. Most people don't. When we come, the way we engage you, some of you we're maybe closer to, we take the opportunity to spend more time and you say, oh yeah, our pastor's not perfect. But that's because we've spent time together. Sometimes we simply recognize that there's no one who really knows us. There's some who know us a little better than others. Some who know us perhaps well, but no one knows every thought, every motivation, every temptation. Except one. And that's your God. God knows every single thought. He knows every single temptation. He knows every time we cut somebody off that was free. We thought, you know, glad that it was like that. God knows. And yet, knowing that, he says, and I want you to serve. I want you to serve. I want you to be engaged. I want you to be a part of the body. We're afraid to engage, we're afraid to serve because the more people get to know us, they might start noticing those faults. They might start noticing where we have weaknesses. They might start noticing, and what God says is, I already know, and it's okay. But never, ever, ever think of yourself more highly than others. Because in the last analysis, we are all coming as broken creatures who are in need of something. And so we serve out of humility. And humility isn't feeling that we cannot serve. Humility isn't meaning that because we know our fault, because we know our failings, that we cannot serve Him. Rather, in the midst of that, we trust Him to do what only He can do. We're not generating more activity just because we think we can generate something and do something. We're living in obedience to Him and trusting that in our weakness, He does something that only He can do. But that calls for all of us to do it. That calls for all of us to live out those giftings and calls that God has given to us. And I love our church because this is the place that I can find my place in God. I can live those things out. Now, when people come to this church, I try to say that they'd like to be more involved, that they would like to engage and be a part of this body. Always try to have this conversation with them. And the conversation basically goes something like this. We don't have a chart with slots that need to be filled. We have a lot of things going on, but we don't have a chart where there's a blank somewhere, and our goal is to fill that blank. We don't do that. The way in which we operate, the way in which we try to live life, is that we simply try to find out where God has given me passion and gifts, and how am I to be desired to use that in this life. And it's interesting what, whenever you approach things that way, there's some things that begin to happen. Now, I want to tell you some stories, because I think it's important that you know that whether your situation, wherever you are in this mix at this particular time, that there are some things that God has done before. And the way that we remember is that we talk about what God has done before. For instance, God's timing is amazing. And I want to give you the example of Kenny and Terry. We're back to back. I can't see you because the light's shining. But they're doing the keynote. Terry doing the keynote back here. And interestingly enough, the week before, or a couple of weeks before they came, it became apparent that the people who were running, doing our media at that point, Keith and Crystal, were going to return to the States. We would be sending them to the States. And so we began to pray, and we did what we always do, and that is we began to pray. And so one week before Keith and Crystal left, I had this conversation with Kenny and Terry. And we talked about the different things that they had interest in and had done before. And then I'll never forget that Terry said something to the effect of, you know, what I'd really love to do is I'd really love to go back to doing what I did when I was first a believer. Just really my first experience in church. He said, I'd love it if I could run to PowerPoint to me. Where I don't know if that's possible, but I'd love to do that. One week before the couple of the students, well, just so happens that we might have an opportunity for you. And they stepped into that position smoothly, and were able to talk to Keith and Chris, who have done a wonderful job in that ministry. You continue to work in that. But you know, not only is God's timing exactly perfect, sometimes we have to wait. Our men's ministry. So a couple of years ago, we had someone who was doing men's ministry, and they left that place of ministry. And because of the fact that we don't fill those slots, there was nobody there. There was no one there at that particular moment to fill the men's ministry spot. And so we simply decided we would wait. And we would wait to see who God brought us. We waited a year. And after a year, Todd Clark. Some of you will remember Todd. Oh, that's right. It was Dan Zerbe, not Todd Clark. It was Dan Zerbe. Here's that one up. Dan Zerbe. Some of you will remember Dan. He's there. But Dan Zerbe came up and said, "You want to do men's ministry thing?" I said, "Well, we've been waiting on you." Dan was new. And so Dan became involved in that. And then after Dan left, it moved from Dan to, at that point, to Todd, because Todd had just arrived. And when Todd left, not too long ago, and moved to another city in Germany, Philip was right there with David and saying, "I have a heart and I have a passion." Sometimes people work behind the scenes. You know, there are people who are doing ministries, involved in ministries, that you never see. Even see them. Yes, she is. She's kind of hiding her face. She's up there. You can go behind her afterwards. Under there. Ava is wonderful. Ava has been in this church for many years and has played an important role. Well, at least I know all of the years that I've been here, but it's been behind the scenes. She's one of the people who might be in the kitchen working, or she might be taking care of the legal aspects of some of what we do in the church. She's working, she's busy, she's doing things that we might not see, but if they didn't get done, we would know it. Working behind the scenes. Sometimes we have people who see opportunities for new ministries and new opportunities. Rosie and Yetta left today to go back to the States for a visit with her family. But Rosie and Yetta began to pray, and it came to me one day and said, "Did you know?" And it was 6 months ago. 6 months ago, said, "Did you know that we had 26 native Spanish speakers?" Well, they worked out to do. So they started a life group. And God has used that life group that is grown and blossomed. Today, after the service, David will tell you a little bit about a new opportunity to maybe start a new life group in minds. And there are people that God has given us who have a vision for something new. But all of this, and the thing is I can tell you story after story after story after story of people who have played a role because they have simply lived out the giftings that they have. Verse 6 says, "Having gifts that differ according to the grace given us, let us use it. If prophecy, then in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving, the one who teaches in his teaching. The one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, and the one who does acts of mercy and virtue." The gifts that God gives. Now that's not a complete list. That's simply saying God is going to give us the gifts that we need as a body to accomplish the task that he's given us. But in order for that to happen, we have to live out the gifts that he has given us. And the gifts originate from him. And because they originate from him, they have power to change lives. Regardless of where or how you serve, God can and will use your gifts to impact life. And so I've seen people who have taught Sunday school lessons that have changed life. I've seen God use those who have the gift of generosity and give over and above whatever they might be expected or thought. And it doesn't matter the size of the gift, it matters the size of the heart. That someone who just gives with a spirit of generosity and God uses it to impact lives. I've seen you as a church exhibit mercy and grace and love in ways over and over. moving to fears. Because it is so clearly exhibited in love and grace. Now, we're going to do something very different today. And I need about 7 people who will help me with that. If you would be willing to help me, would you come to that man here to be with not to be a creator or just a person sitting here? You might as well move. But here's what I need. Here's what we're going to do. We've created a little sheet paper. You do not have to fill it out. Okay? You can just cut it in the back pocket and we'll use it at perfect time. But it is designed to give you the opportunity to say, here is what I believe. We have 2 people to get it is designed to give you the opportunity to say, here's what I feel like my gifts are, my passion. And again, there's no pressure. But if you would like to fill that out, let us know. This can be put in an offering plate after the service, at the end of the service, or it can be dropped off at the end of the service. These folks are going to take these. Everybody gets a set of names, a page, no pressure. Susan, do you mind giving us some music? Yes, that's right. Some working music here. And then we'll have pins. By the way, you can take a pin with you if you need a pin. Make sure we do get some upstairs.